practice is being responsible. Responsible is able to respond as this moment universe. That's what we call beginner's mind. Not being able to respond because you have ABC skill or experience, but because we are present this moment without holding to experience, what we know, what we don't know, what we are good at, what we are not good at, what we should do or shouldn't do. When we walk by something and say, oh, that's not mine to do, or, oh, that shouldn't require my efforts, someone else, right there, we're missing our life of this present moment. Response able means that we don't hold to the fixed habits that arise. Not that they don't arise, but, oh, I don't know how to cook when it's our opportunity need to cook. I'm not good at, and you fill in. Doesn't matter which. I'm not good at gardening. I'm not good at computer work. I'm not good at cleaning. I'm not good at, or I am good at this, but not right there. We are living in our daydreams, in our habits, and missing this moment. And that's all we have, is this moment. Not this moment, me and the world, but this moment, the whole universe that is our life of encounter. See? That's why we have the expression, which is the title of that wonderful book by Suzuki Roshi, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Despite our resistance to it, despite our holding to the expert mind of what so-and-so is like and what such-and-such should be, the ability to respond is what we as humans have. We as beings have in this life. See, the simplest response is when we breathe out. All of you can breathe out, and at a certain point you respond to the need for oxygen, air, by breathing in. It's very natural. See, that's being responsible. That's being able to respond as this moment. In all sorts of ways, habits and tendencies, beliefs and reactions hinder us, and we don't even notice it. See, the not noticing it is how much we're not responding as this moment. It's neither good nor bad, it's simply the cause and effect, and yet it's the practice opportunity. able to respond, is able to hear the universe this moment. Able to respond is able to feel. Doesn't mean you have to do any particular thing. Doesn't mean we have to respond in any particular way. See, our ability to respond grows out of our ability to be present and our capacity. And yet our capacity is only hindered, or let me say it differently, is often hindered by, oh, I don't do that. I shouldn't. I can't. I won't. It's not fair. I don't want to. Responding isn't anything fancy. As I said, it's breathing in, inhaling after you've exhaled. That's responding. That's being responsible. And all of you know what happens if you exhale and don't respond. You know it very well. See, it's quite natural. That's how natural practice is. It's responding and being willing to respond as this beginner's mind, heart, body, life that we are. See, responding is a whole beingness. We have all sorts of opportunities from morning to night, from when we open our eyes or even before we open our eyes, when we wake up and we're achy or feeling great or tired. And every encounter, an encounter isn't so-called just outside others, it's encounter this moment. Breathing in, breathing out is responding. Being listening is responding. Being responsible, being able to respond, doesn't mean doing any particular thing. It's only our inability or unwillingness to see what is so, to be what is so, that hinders us. It's only holding to preconceived ideas, beliefs about so-called me or so-called others that hinders our functioning. And it's our willingness to see those when they arise that is a practice opportunity. Our unwillingness, our wishful thinking, doesn't change reality, it doesn't change what is so, and it doesn't allow us to be alive, to be this life that we are. And this is relevant in all sorts of realms, but we'll keep it simple here for now. This is what we hear over and over if you listen to the dialogues and encounters of various ancient masters or modern masters. See? Since I brought up yesterday Master Shoshan, or Shuzan in Sino-Japanese, Shoshan Chingnian, my Chinese is terrible, so please excuse it, but I'll mention a few other encounters, dialogues of his, which are very nice examples. A monk asked, what is Shoshan? Shoshan is literally the name of the mountain where his temple was. So that's, as some of you know, the practice and custom in China and Japan, and even in the United States in some places, for a head of a temple or a monastery to take on the name of the mountain where he is, or where the temple is. In fact, most of you know, most of the people that you know, if you know Obaku or Wangpo, that's really a mountain name and a temple name. Linji. Dogen's often referred to as Ehe, which is a mountain temple name, and so forth. So, Shoshan literally means head mountain. So that's the name of the mountain, head mountain or chief mountain. I'm not sure how it got that name, but it doesn't make a difference. So this disciple is asking, what is Shoshan? But he's asking much more, who, what are you? What's the truth of who, what you are? Shoshan responds, East Mountain is high, West Mountain is low. Very simple and straightforward. Then the disciple, the questioner, doesn't hear, see. Instead, has got some ideas. Oh, what about the person inside the mountain? No, I'm not interested in those. You know, that mountain's high, that mountain's low. I want to get some important truths. I want to get some philosophical fundamental points. Master responds, fortunately for you, my staff isn't in my hand. Not interested in anything but what's right here. Asks about mountains, is told. Because don't go living in a daydream. That's what we do when we don't respond. There's all sorts of daydreams that we live in. And our practice is to respond or to notice what daydream we're living in that's leading to us missing this moment of life, this moment of activity, this moment encounter, this moment breath. Appropriate for our time, Shoshan had another questioner ask, what is the I that does not deceive others? He's asking, or very trying to ask a question in a way about genuine awakening or some such thing. But Shoshan responded very directly. Again, responsible, responding directly. Look, winter is approaching. But can you imagine being in a mountain just like us? Oh, what doesn't deceive others? Oh, look, I see. It's all the leaves have fallen and the wind is blowing strong. Look, winter's approaching. But the questioner wasn't satisfied with the immediate response, the responsible response. So he said, but what about the ultimate meaning of it all? The ultimate meaning, I mean, what's really important? No, winter, that doesn't matter. What's really important? The master said, oh, and after that, we will have gentle spring breeze. If we live up in our daydream, then we walk through the daydream throughout the day and we don't see the piece of paper that needs to be picked up from the floor. Oh, that's not mine. I'm thinking important things. Or we don't close the window that's left open. What is the body of space, the body of the of emptiness? We even say, what is the Dharma body? Shoshan replied, your old teacher is underneath your feet. Here. Oh, why, Reverend Sir, are you under the feet of your own pupil? He said, oh, this poor blind fellow. This poor blind fellow who's living up in a daydream. Practice is always in this moment, not in some ideas about it. See, we have our opportunity in each moment of responding, of being able to respond. We don't need to figure out anything else. Not because there isn't a time or place to do that if you want to, but if we carry that around in all sorts of places, then we miss, then we have, quote, an expert's mind who knows all sorts of things and knows what they should or shouldn't do, knows who should or shouldn't be in front of them, what should or shouldn't taste like. Then we miss the food that we put in our mouth because we don't taste it. We don't feel the bowl when we're holding it. We don't feel the floor as we're walking on it. And we don't see the person who's speaking to us in our life. Instead, they shouldn't say that to me. They should know better. I shouldn't, or they shouldn't, or they should. Now, these are very, quote, normal tendencies and habits. They're the result of all sorts of cause and effect, all sorts of past, if I use a fancy word, karma, or simple words, just cause and effect. If you want to call them biological, if you want to call them psychological, sociological, genetic, etc., etc. Those are all fine and dandy ways of explaining them. Nevertheless, it's how now, what to do. How is it right now? What is possible? What is called for right now? That's the simplicity and immediacy of our practice. In the midst of our individual skills and abilities, in the midst of our developing our capacities in all sorts of ways, as a musician, as a computer programmer, as a doctor, and you go on. All sorts of abilities that we develop. Wonderful. And yet, it's always the capacity to be this beginner's functioning, this able to respond, that, if we say it, this being open loving, if I use that kind of word, that's called the awakened state. So, it's that way when we're in session here. It's going to be that way when we all disperse after session to our friends, family, work, strangers, the grocery store, and everywhere else. Okay. Often, when we use the word "you're responsible," we think of it in terms of blame or burden or judgment. Or in many other ways that in a way hinders us from seeing how wonderful our ability to respond is. Just as the trees is able to respond to the change of season by dropping leaves, by the leaves turning color, by the chlorophyll moving out of the leaves. That's being responsible. We want to go to who's doing it, who's responsible. All we see from morning to night is responsible. The universe responding. And our opportunity is to be this universe that we are and respond. Respond to the conditions as they appear inside, as they change, stronger, weaker, better, able to do, less able to do, doesn't make a difference. If we add on judgment and value to those, we get in trouble. Is the budding tree in the spring better responsible than the bare tree with the leaves all around it in the beginning of winter? Only if we daydream about it in that way. All the more so with people and the trouble that we can get into, or the joy we can embody according to our encounter and responding to the circumstances and conditions. Okay, I'm going to stop here and maybe we can explore some of what I've said together. If you need to change your position, please feel free. Yes. Excuse me.
Many responses I've made to my environment over my lifetime have been foolish or even harmful.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I don't trust all of my responses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not inclined to do that.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to ponder.
Often, instead of responding, we react. We react out of self-centeredness. We react out of beliefs. I use the word react very specifically to connect to the habits of mind, habits of seeing, habits of functioning that are not responding out, or if I say it differently, are not responding out of beginner's mind, but instead responding out of self-centeredness. Therefore, you're right. All sorts of harm and stress and suffering, whether to ourselves or others. But if we keep on holding on to, I'm going to ponder this more, we miss our life. See? Because it's not a matter of pondering and figuring out alternative It's letting go of the what we hold on to in the way of, if I'll use the word, self-centeredness, so that we can be present. See, then a response, even a response of non-action, can grow out of the I and the universe together this moment, as opposed to I want, I don't want, it's not fair, reactions. See, it's the reactions of holding to dreams or to greed and anger, the various poisons that cause trouble. See, so, and we can see the difference, as you say. We can see where our actions result in consequences that hinder. That's why I made that connection between the ability to respond and the ability, if I say it that way, and the willingness to let go of holding to self-centered beliefs, to ideas about what is and isn't, as opposed to being what is. And we've all had actions that it's useful to atone for, to be willing to notice what we've done that hasn't worked, that's resulted in stress and harm for us and others, when that comes up. But we don't have to go searching for that. Actually, tomorrow, at the start of Jukai, we will have a Jukai tomorrow, and we start the Jukai with confession and atonement. Now, primarily, it's those, the people taking Jukai, receiving the precepts, but it's all the rest of us as well participate in that, can participate. In some practice places, they every day they start with confession and atonement, because that's the opportunity for us in practice. However, that's different than responding or being able to respond or being responsibility. Because if we hold back and ponder, then that much we live in our pondering and we miss our function. That's some of those dialogues of Shoshan that I was bringing up, was people who were pondering and missing right what's under their feet, missing the response, because the question, instead of being right here, was off in some daydream. But we can see, you don't have to believe this, simply notice how, what happens in your encounters, where and how you are responding or are not willing to respond. And the simplest place is sitting upright. As I said, we breathe in, breathe out. Breathing out, we then have the opportunity of response by breathing in, or not. Seems most of us choose it, but do we taste and sense and be the inhalation? Or not. I'm sure most of us choose to inhale. Yes, Itai.
I don't know how relevant this is, but sometimes you make a choice whether to respond directly or not, and it's not necessarily the right or the wrong choice. Yesterday I was sitting in the back room when I heard, I didn't know who it was, but I heard someone fall and say, ow, 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 in a lot of pain, and I somebody was hurt just in the other room. And of course it's the natural response for all of us to rush in and see who's hurt, what can I do? But I thought to myself, no, there's already several people responding. So then yesterday in your Dharma talk, I had seen Maria out there. She's walking around and I asked Ed, go check on Maria. And you told him no. So I don't know, other than if I had gone in to see if I could help, that would have not been wrong or better, or but there may be consequences to my decision, but we just make a decision almost randomly as best we can, and then we just live with the consequences.
It's not almost randomly, but it should be as best we can. So you heard someone cry, and then you heard other people there. So that's responding. And hearing others there, you said, okay, there's one, two, three others there. More would be inappropriate because it would get in the way of taking care. So instead of saying, oh, well, what's going on? I want to know where, what? You say, okay, there. It's being taken care of right now. If there was no one else there, that you might very well have responded differently. So, response isn't a fixed form. It's being present so that we can see and hear not out of our own ideas and reaction, but out of what's right now here to the extent and capacity that we have. If you were a doctor, let's say, I would have expected you to get up and go over despite the fact that there were others there, because you had skills and abilities that were different. So that's all connected with response. See, response doesn't mean that you do a certain thing. It's that there's the ability and the willingness to be this present moment. The ability and willingness to drop or allow to be transparent or allow not to be hindered by our ideas that we hold to and identifications of what should and shouldn't and who is and isn't and the various other ways that we blind ourselves and blind others. All sorts of ways in our immediate life and in various areas of our life where we hold on to ideas and identifications. That's why we call it beginner's mind, is the not holding on to those. It's not that those don't exist. Of course those exist. You have capacity to know about medication that I don't, because you're a pharmacist. But it's not holding on to that capacity. It's just that's appears and disappears according to what's appropriate, what's called for. It's our willingness to not hold to knowing mind, if I use that word, knowing heart, knowing attitude. See, then we could be with those that we encounter, those that we are responsible towards, which is everyone and everything. And yet, there's only this particular one, this particular moment. Responding, again, responsible doesn't mean so-called others. Responsible means so-called our whole life, which is ourself and others in every other way that we want to speak of it. This isn't a formula that we can, just like using phrases like beginner's mind, or yesterday we spoke of not knowing. Using that phrase is just a pointer and a guideline. That's not it. Just like saying being breathing isn't it. That's it. Otherwise, if you say, oh, I'm being breathing, and not breathe, you know what's going to happen. You'll collapse. It's very simple in one sense, and yet it's not at all, because habits are so strong that whether it's the holding to thoughts and mind chatter, we need to over and over make the appropriate effort right now. Because, well, I did that once. I shouldn't have to label thoughts again. I did it. How come it's coming up again? I handled that. In a way, it's obvious, but in a way, it's not so obvious. And when it's not obvious, then we see what to do.
So I've noticed that it's, I think this is what you're saying, I'll say it in different words perhaps, is I've noticed that it's difficult for me to respond if I'm not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone, and I won't say specifically, but someone messes up my plan or encroaches on my comfort zone or something, and this reaction arises naturally, it arises, it's like you say, cause and effect. That's what I'm paying attention to. And my attention turns, and I'm putting my attention energy, let's say, into this reaction as opposed to what's happening right in front of me.
Instead of attending to, as you say, instead of being in the midst of the messed up plan, you're at the how dare them mess my plan up. It's not fair that my plan got messed up. I knew it was, this was the way it was supposed to be. And in a way, that blinds us. See? Or it constricts us. And you can feel it. See, we could feel it in our body if we're present bodily. We could feel it in our thoughts, in our rage or anger or sadness or all the other ways, which fine, those are just reactive habits. But if we can notice those, if we can allow those to be permeable and more transparent or translucent, then we can see and be where we are and respond. See, if we go to the store and have an idea of what's supposed to be there and look at the produce and it's not what we had in mind, we could get very angry and walk out. Or we can say, oh, they've got this and that and that. Which do I want? None of them? Maybe. Oh, no, this one will be okay, even though it's not what I had in mind. So we could go hungry and be righteous about what they should have. We could miss the people we're with if we're righteous about how they should be, or who should be here, or who shouldn't be here. Some of you might be visiting with friends and family in the next few weeks or month. And all sorts of circumstances might appear when people aren't the way you want them, or aren't there, or people who you don't want to be there are there. And what's the response? The able to respond to how the universe is appearing, when and who and what is happening. This is why practice is our morning to night opportunity, because the universe keeps appearing, if I say it in such a way, not according to how we determine it, despite the fact that it's nothing but this ongoing change, cause and effect. Nevertheless, it's this moment, opportunity. So then, to use the expression that Suzuki Roshi said, in the beginner's mind, there's many, many opportunities, many options. In the expert's mind, I'm paraphrasing, there's very few. Yes. Leif.
I've noticed with myself that there's a much different flavor towards when I'm reacting, when I'm centered and letting the response come naturally. Mm. And so I can almost always be aware of that. And if I know I'm spinning, well, then usually I either sit or go work out or put it down for a while, because I know that brute force brain power doesn't work as well. Yeah. So that's helped me.
Good.
Especially relationships.
Good. Thank you. Interesting way you put it. Brute force brain power. That's a very nice expression. And it's not just brain power, but sometimes it's brute force verbal actions or brute force emotion. Very nice. Because we sometimes brute ourselves and brute others. That's, you know, anger and greed are brutish, and we suffer from them. We suffer and are stressed with it, and we can see that sometimes. Sometimes we only see it after a while. And the other side is to be willing to let go when that occurs. It occurred, done, okay. Because that is just a reactive habit. And if we don't hold on to it, whether it's so-called coming from others or so-called coming from ourselves in the past, then we can take care of right now. And if there's something to clean up from the brute force, we can do that as best we can. See, that's the loving openness, to be open to that having occurred and not having to hold on to it. See, that's another aspect of this knowing mind, which expert mind. Oh, I was harmed by, and therefore I can't be open to being with so and so now, because as I said, over and over we have opportunities where we encounter people who might have once upon a time, quote, done us wrong, or we did them wrong. And the willingness to be here and see what's called for now, that doesn't mean being stupid. If there's someone who always takes a swing at us, of course we keep our distance, but to seeing and being how it is now is what gives us the opportunity and gives others the opportunity to go beyond those habits and reactions and anger. And that's, after all, what loving openness is. That's, after all, what living in this world as a bodhisattva is. Or, if I say it simply, living in this world as we truly are. See, that's what being responsible is. Responsible. Yes?
And what about having difficulties in letting stuff go that, that I recognize are coming up again and over and over again, and you know, getting upset that they're coming up all the time. And, and sometimes I find there's a not willing to let it go.
Oh, okay. So that's, isn't that your wonderful practice?
Responding, and how you respond when it's off. You're fighting against yourself, and you need to.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not willing to let it go. So what is skillful and appropriate practice right now when I feel I really am not willing to let it go? That's a good practice question. Your capacity to see what to do when it feels like that, when it is like that, and if need be, consulting with others. But most of the time it's you're there by yourself. That's where your practice, so to speak, hits the road. The rubber hits the road there. What to do when I feel so Oh, it hurts so much, it's so unfair. What to do right there? Or whichever way it is. You're right.
And you're not
going to
give an answer.
Of course. What use would my answer be anyway? You want me to be responsible. You don't want to be. I've given you many answers. The simplest one is bow with it and then see what to do. Be present, breathe in, breathe out. But that's general. And general answers are fine, and yet we have to see right this moment how to respond to this moment. Not with some generality that we figured it out or pondered. That's fine. And yet, here is where we have to decide, are we going to turn left, right, or go straight? Or not go anywhere? If there was an advanced, perfect answer, then it wouldn't be this ongoing change universe. It would just be, oh, this is just the way it is and there's nothing else. It's ongoing change. That means so-called inside, so-called outside, so-called self, so-called others are constantly, constantly manifesting the Dharma in the myriad forms, and it's your opportunity to nurture your life, which is the life of exactly this encounter moment. That's your opportunity. That's what gives joy. That's what is joyous. As we jump into that, that's what being a beginner is. Begin begin right now. Yes, Steve.
If this is too much off the mark, or we can talk about it some other time, but remember you posted that book on your blog, the book about the brain.
I don't know which book.
Well, it's a popular book about how the brain works, and you posted it there. You said it. You did.
No, I don't remember what it is. So why don't you be specific?
Well, I don't know the name of it.
Neither do I. See, I don't remember things. That's why it's good to put it on the computer, and then I don't have to remember it. The computer remembers for me. So I could probably go look it up, but it's not right now. So what's the question right now? See.
Well, the question from the book talked about how the brain operates in subroutines. And it's the computer model of, we have this notion that we are this individual that makes choices, like Brett was talking about, that we make choices, and we make moral-based choices. And the book was saying that in reality, there's all these sub-programs going on, and we don't have this free opportunity to choose what we do. So what we call brutish in some ways is just, and the biggest sub-program is called Jack Meets Jill, and there have a bunch of little Jacks and Jills. And everything that we do, that's our survival mode, and everything we do is in some way based on that little equation. It's not E equals MC squared, it's Jack Meets Jill, and there are little Jacks and Jills. So, when I...
Let me stop. So, in a way, if I restate that, I could say we are at the result of the force of all sorts of cause and effect. That's what I said earlier. You want to call it computer, you want to call it subroutines, we could say it's biological, genetic, sociological, psychological, all sorts of cause and effect come together as this moment, as our ability to hear, taste, speak, function. Yes. Nevertheless, practice is the right this moment in the midst of all that cause and effect. The ability to be free in the midst of that, to be that or to be blinded by that. Otherwise, there's nothing that you could call practice. There's nothing that you could call intention and commitment. There's nothing that you could call raising the Bodhi mind. Doesn't mean that it all of those don't continue. Nevertheless, we have a choice when greed appears, to the extent that we could sense it. We have a choice when anger arises, how much we put it out or how much we notice it. And that's not a matter of theory, because we see it. That's why when we do Zazen, it's being in the midst of that cause and effect. And nevertheless, because we are bigger than that, despite the fact that we believe that that's who we are, we're not blinded and limited by it. Just in this moment, breath. Just in this moment, noticing. So I don't remember that particular book, but that's neither here nor there. That's fine. What you say is fine. Yes. When you sit, you're the cause and effect moment, so-called inside, I'll use it in that way, so-called outside of your sitting isn't my sitting. And yet, we are sitting together right here. So it is shared, and yet we each have our own practice. We each have to open our own eyes, breathe for ourselves. You could sit there and breathe and it won't do me any good. I have to breathe and taste this breath. So despite the fact that Buddha says all beings are the wisdom and perfection of Buddha, or all beings together attain the way, because that's so, despite the fact that that's so, we each have to take this step, respond this moment, be able and willing to respond as this moment. Otherwise, we won't inhale and we'll collapse. So, does that, what Steve has, might have more.
Well, that, I like that. That wasn't the direction I was going, but it's a good answer. Nonetheless.
Thank you.
But it seems to me that we prejudice the difficulties we have by saying we're unwilling, where we trivial up. I think sometimes the language trivializes the bind we're in. And the bind is fear-based and it's survival-based. And right. We're not being whimsical and even, okay, now let me, self-centered in this culture has a certain connotation of being selfish. And it has a moral sting to it. Most people who were raised in the Midwest, you know, which is dominated by Protestant upbringing, is going to hear self-centered as a moral challenge.
Mm.
When in fact, it's just our struggle to survive psychologically, physically, emotionally. And we're trying to make quick decisions based on some sense, some fear. Fear comes up, even in the slightest way. Somebody asks me to do something, and I fear that I'm being knocked down on the pecking order. And knocked down on the pecking order is threatening. It's nothing to be trivialized. It's a threat. And we were sort of programmed to not get knocked down on the pecking order. So we react sometimes unskillfully.
Yes.
And it's not about our, I guess I just want to kind of stick up for us. It's some big stuff that come, you know, it's some big stuff that we have to work with. And we're really up against it sometimes, up against millions and millions of years of biology.
Yes. And practice, and even caught in self-centered dream, doesn't involve blame. If you remember, in the Gatha of Atonement, we say beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance born of my body, mouth, and thought. It is a product of being human that these habits, as I said, all sorts of forces are what result in this fear and the self-centeredness. There is no blame involved. There's just the opportunity, because the alternative is to continue holding that and therefore having more stress, suffering, harm. That's the choice we have right now, this moment, and we have right now, this moment, and that's it. The before and after are all daydreams right now. We take care of right now, and cause and effect, fear, and all the rest of those habits will arise, and then we get to take care of them again. Because that's the opportunity. Because from the beginning, we are not. We are not that daydream of self-centeredness. We are not limited to just those fears, anger, greed. That's the other aspect of practice. That's what we, from the beginning, practice is in awakening. We are awakened, despite the fact that we don't agree. That's fine. We don't have to, because until we taste it with our own tongue, it's not so for us. And we taste a little bit, and then we go back into, oh yeah, I've got to be higher on the pecking order than him, or she's going to, or whatever.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not suggesting that we verbalize that.
No.
I'm saying that even words like greed, anger, and ignorance are loaded.
Yes.
And if someone can tell me that beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance doesn't have a judgmental tone to it, I'm not buying it.
Okay. Nevertheless, I will say, let go of the judgment, because that isn't where it's coming from. Notice the judgment and know that it's simply cause and effect. Just like when I lift this up and let go, the fall, it has no judgment involved. This didn't fall because it was bad. Gravity isn't a result of, quote, badness. Falling isn't bad. It simply happens when I open my hand. Just happens.
And sometimes mindfulness is assertive.
So it's, and yes, we tend to add on judgment. So our practice opportunity is to notice the judgment and be bigger than the judgment. Be bigger, let it be transparent and not blind us. It appears, fine, but I still can see you. If it blinds us, then we don't see the people, the circumstances, the life that we're encountering. That's the opportunity of practice. That's why it's so simple. In the Zendo, there's very little that's threatening. I don't walk around with a stick and hit people. That's a, you know, a traditional mode in Zen, but it's hard for people to get to have that happening without being threatened, fearful. But even in the simple place where we're just sitting still, no one is going to do anything. 20, 30 minutes sitting still, fear can appear.
Yep.
And that's our opportunity to see how it appears of itself, and therefore how we can respond to it, how we're able to respond so that we're not caught and blinded by it, so it doesn't hinder and cause stress, dissatisfaction to us and others, and harm. And yes, it's each moment responsibility. Each moment able to respond. Otherwise, what we have is you look out in the world and you see the wars and the killing and the all the torture and all the other things that people can do on big levels and on small levels, person to person, at work, in families, people who won't go to certain family meetings because someone else is or isn't there, or other things like that. Even that. So, this is our opportunity, over and over each moment, to breathe and be responsible, be marinated in this moment breath, in this moment endless dimension, universal life. Despite the fact that you say, oh, those are words, but that's not so. Fine. So we practice until we can see that how that is so. You don't have to believe me or any of the ancestors or Buddhas who say that. That's why they say, see what's right under your own feet. If you take a step and the ground is there, right there, you're able to respond to this step. Okay, I've spoken too much. Thank you.
Copyright 2013, Eliu Genmyo Smith.